So if you just tuned in, you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. So Jada Tarbutton Springfield has arrived in the studio, and we're going to spin. Welcome, Jada. Oh, let me turn your mic up.
Sorry, I'm dealing with a little what we call CP time, colored people time. In other words, I didn't know where I was going. Even though I've been to this building many times, so I'm happy to be here. Thank you, Ruthie. You are an angel.
Well, I'm glad, so glad you can make it. Jada and I went to Emmer Cinema yesterday and saw.
We did.
I'm not your Negro.
Your Negro. Negro.
Yeah, what did you think, Jada, about the movie?
Oh, my goodness. You were sitting next to me. I'm glad I was there with you. You see, I recoiled. I don't know what that little insect is that recalls for protection. You and I actually had asked me to go on Sunday, and I think that's when Professor Bracey and the group of people, and it was sold out.
It wasn't a UMass professor, but it was a different.
I saw his name on the list.
Was it? Maybe he was there too.
Yeah, but anyway. it was sold out, and so then we said, let's go see it on Tuesday. And I got there, and I was just recoiled, and watching the whole thing, and it was just bringing back so much stuff. It was a documentary.
Yeah, do you want to tell listeners a little bit what the movie's about?
Yeah, let's do that. Oh, I'm sorry. Right.
Maybe I should do that instead of just
how many people listen to this? Hi, people. Hi. In case you don't know me, hi. I'm happy to be here. Hi.
So do you want to talk about what the movie's about? Or
I'll give a little scenario, the synopsis here. It's I Am Not Your Negro. It's director Raul Peck. It's 95 minutes long. It really is. In 1977, Jones Baldwin wrote a letter to his literary agent describing his next project, Remember This House. The book was to be revolutionary, personal account of the lies and successive assassinations of three of his close friends, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King Jr. At the time of Baldwin's death in 1987, I think it was the fall of 1987, I'm going off course, he was a visiting professor at UMass. Sorry. He left behind only 30 completed pages of his manuscript. Now, in his incendiary new documentary, master filmmaker Raul Peck envisions this book, James Baldwin, never finished. A New York Times critic's pick, nominated for an Academy Award for a documentary feature.
So we saw it yesterday. Do you know how long is it still playing at Emmer Cinema?
Yes.
As a matter of fact,
I think I gave you the list. It is still playing there, and it is showing Friday. What's the day now?
Today is Wednesday, the 22nd.
Today's Wednesday. Oh, is tomorrow the last day?
It might be.
Oh no. It starts at 2:00, 4:47, and 9:45. People, please see this. See this movie if you can. It's at the Amherst Cinema, and please, if you could go see it. It's a must-see.
I highly recommend it.
I highly recommend it. It's a must-see. It's in limited theaters. And I think Samuel L. Jackson had, I was involved in the film.
He did the narration for it. I think so.
Professor Bracey, John Bracey, who was my professor. Hi, Professor Bracey. Thank you for everything that you taught me. Mm-hmm. And a number of people, Sonia Sanchez, she was the first one reading. We got there a little late. What is it about me and being late? Oh, my. I got to stop with this colored people time. I thought I'd learned my lesson.
So the film, when I got home, one of my housemates was like, so if you could synopsize in it in a couple of sentences, like what would
intense,
you say it's about?
Powerful.
Yeah, I told her that I felt like one of the big, huge points of it was just to humanize black people for white people. And it was kind of funny in a way, like, the portrayals of white people. So it took a lot of clips from the media, like movies and news, and all these clips. And the clips that it had about white people, a lot of them their lives seemed so devoid of meaning.
Right.
Yeah, just like the superficial. Like there's some, I think there's a clip of like, I don't know, like Ginger Rogers and Fred Astaire or some some famous dancers in this love scene. And it's just, the love just seems so vacuous, like nothing there. When at the same time, they're all, there's like this intense racial stuff going on that you're seeing in the film. And it's the same. It's always been this way.
Yeah.
But
yes. Well, I'm hoping I'm wrong about the dates, and I will, you know, I wish I could expand the dates, but let me just give you the address of the Amherst Theater. Their phone number is 413-253-2547, and their web address is amherstcinema, all one word, .org, and it's in Amherst at 28 Amity Street, and it's all nice and all cute from the days when I remember I was a poor pleading poverty student at Amherst. So it was all nice, and they even had popcorn that looked delicious, but I didn't feel like eating. It's not the kind of stuff that I feel like eating.
Oh, come on. But you ate the stuff that you brought in.
Be quiet. I'm a poor black woman. I'm used to doing it. I sure did.
I ate the stuff you brought in.
I certainly did.
Thank you.
I bring my own stuff in. I'm sorry. That's from the pole days, from going in the, what is that, the driving. You didn't have to say that on a radio show. These people might come after me. But anyway, I do support, listen to you, I do support, what are these things? Not these big blockbuster theaters. What do you call these? Like, independent theater?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so you can have a membership. You one telling off woman, Ruthie.
You're the one crunching the potato chip bag dark.
Well, it's something about movies you feel like eating, and that's why I have a protruding belly. But anyway, if you can, it's the local cinema and independent films. So we can all support that, too. So I gave you that. You know what? I'm going to tell your business, too.
don't tell people what I do on the sly in my
business. Well, I'll find your business now, Miss Thing. But anyway, people, so if you could do that also, we want to give a plug in. Now, Animus, Amherst Cinema, now I should be getting free movies from you now.
Free popcorn, since I'm, at least.
Well, now I'll bring my own popcorn and my own water. But no, you should really support it. I think that was a real good congressman. I think he was out of Worcester who came
McGovern.
And gave it.
Yeah, McGovern.
Oh, please know all our congressmen and stuff with all that's going on politically right now. And if you can, wear a pink hat, that would be real nice. I wear a black one for anatomically correct reasons.
So Jada, one of the other things I wanted to talk with you about.
No, let's talk a little bit about this movie.
About this. Yeah,
really,
let's talk more about
just
this.
Because. Okay, there was so much. I told you I recoiled at so much stuff in it. And he was basically talking about, I think initially, he was over in France because
James Baldwin,
because of so much of the racism stuff that he grew up in, and he was a writer. And he went over there because, you know, he just felt safer over there to be able to write. And then with some of the stuff that was coming on, happening here in the States politically, that he went over there, he just felt compelled to come back here in the States. And he got to know some of the giants here. And he talked about these three deaths, senseless deaths, actually. And it started off first with Medgar Evers. And you know, he was a tiny, not a tiny guy, but he saw them sort of giants in a way, you know, the posture of them and how senseless it was and the political turmoil, but being a part of it. And what it did to him as a person, what it did to him in the movement. And what I was amazed was because, you know, I wanted to take his class when I was here. So I also felt like I knew him. I was like, I knew someone who was going to buy his computer. Oh, my God. I mean, not computer. It was a typewriter. Uh-huh. And I wanted to take his class. And, you know, I knew all these people, you know, Esther Terry and everybody who knew him. And they called him Jimmy, you know. So I felt like I knew him. So in one way, because you're my white ally and I love you, I felt very safe being next to you. But I almost in the theater wasn't that crowded. So I was there around you. And, of course, I at times when I was weeping, but you are an ally, and I know, I don't know if the audience know that, but you are in, this is your good business, that you do your work as an ally against racism, against sexism, against injustice. So that I felt comfortable, but this is the stuff I felt like, you know, I've been living politically, personally, and politically, and they were talking about that, and so I felt like I got him on stage where I missed this part because he had died before I got to take a class with him. So I felt like I got a part, I want to say a part of Professor Baldwin. So I had all these emotions. And I have to also preface and say, I saw Hidden Figures this weekend. So I was already crying because here I am priding myself, I think, knowing about African-American history. And here are these amazing women that did so much in science and mathematics and engineering that I didn't know anything about. So part of me is feeling like being a student from the cradle to the grave is that, wow, there's much more amazing women that I didn't know anything about and their contributions into the world that I didn't know anything about. So one part is like, I'm glad that that's happening and we're learning about it. But then it's the backdrop of what's going on now politically. But then it's also intermixed with, but we're out there and we're putting on our pink hats and we're getting rid of the dump or whatever you want to call it. And let's stand there. Let's do this revolution, however it comes. So I have all that mixture of stuff going in and then being reminded of it. And their deaths and seeing their bodies. You know, I didn't see Martin Luther King's body. I don't even want to cry.
Yeah.
But I'm going to, you know, seeing their death and then the kids, seeing their daddy's death and then seeing Meg. And I knew all this. Of course, I have watched Eyes on the Prize almost every series from the beginning to the end, you know. You know, the one thing that we did right was the day we started to fight. You know, the whole thing about Eyes on the Prize. So I've watched that. I've studied all that. And seeing this again from a different perspective and seeing, you know, James Baldwin, was he on a Dick Cavett show?
Yeah.
They show that?
Yeah.
And then the guy coming in, arguing with him on the show. You know, Jimmy didn't argue like me. Like, I'd be like, get out of my face. I'm from the South. I will snap, whatever. But the way he argued and so articulate when he did that with him. And, you know, he knew his stuff.
Yeah, there's this review from the New York Times talks about that piece of the movie. And it says, at one point on the Dick Cavett show, Baldwin tangles with Paul Weiss, a Yale philosophy professor who scolds him for dwelling so much on
racial issues.
He puts
him in his place, audience. Let me tell you, you should just go see it for that. Let me tell you. What's the way he slay him? He gives him the tea. He shades him, whatever the new vernacular is.
Yeah, this reviewer says the initial spectacle of mediocrity condescending to genius is painful, but the subsequent triumph of self-taught brilliance over credentialed ignorance is thrilling to witness.
Yeah, that was it. Okay, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's what you saying.
And then there was another scene. He was in, was it in France, like a House of Commons? And you know, he gets up there. He's little old feet. Well, I don't want to say little feet, but you know, he gets this little, I call it bohemian chic, with that cigar. First, I want to say, put them cigarettes down.
He was,
you know,
smoking a lot.
Put that down, you know, because he smoked. And remember how he moved his little cigarette tray next to him, you know, when he does stuff like that. So he gets up and he does his speech. He's very articulate. Mm-hmm. He kind of reminds me of a Henry Louis Gates, so to speak. But you could tell the intensity of what he was talking about. And he gets up and he speaks, and then, you know, you have all these sea of white audience listening at every word, they're hanging on every word that he says. Mm-hmm. So he gets up and speaks, and then he wants to sit down, and he sits down, and he almost wants to say, like, today's word would be, boom, I dropped the mic. But he doesn't say it like that because this is not the time. This is, what, 60s, you know. Mm-hmm. So he says his speech, and then all of a sudden they give up. They're listening. It's very quiet. It's kind of like when I do a play. You know, we do a play and we go, God, there's a cemetery out there. And then the next thing you know, you go out, and then they give you a rousing standing ovation. And then you're like, well, okay, well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. It's like they gave him a rousing standing ovation. And he's looking, and he's the only white guy out there. So he's looking at them like, well, all right. Well, all right, I'll take that. Did you see that part?
I did. Yeah, this review talks about it, too.
Oh, it does?
It says that
I've read that.
Yeah, he was in a speech for an audience of British university students.
Is that where it was?
Yeah, and he says, when the students erupt in a standing ovation at the end of his remarks, Baldwin looks surprised, even flustered.
It does tell me what it says, really.
It says, you glimpse an aspect of his personality that was often evident in his writing. The vulnerable, bright, ambitious man thrust into a public role that was not always comfortable.
Ah, see, I said it. See there? Look here. You see, Ruthie and me, I hadn't even read that. And you see, I'm giving it to you this way. Doesn't it sound like the scene from Sanford and Son? You remember that cop that used to be the white cop and the black cop?
Sorry,
you never saw
that TV.
Ruthie, Lord have mercy, honey child. If you're gonna hang out with me, you need to get these references that I'm talking about. You gotta watch that. That's home tonight. I'm giving you a directive. All go right. Home and watch that. It's Sanford and Son. There used to be this white cop. He used to say, I'm with the Caucasian persuasion. And then the black cop would tell Fred Sanford, oh, he's just going crazy.
I got to do that for my cultural literacy.
Thank you.
Right?
Thank
cultural
you.
Literacy.
You hang out with me. I've been eating all these sprouts. When you come to my place, you say, I just ate that biscuit you gave me because I didn't, you know, and it was good. I don't know what it was in it, but I trust you and I love you.
The housemaid Ben made that.
Well, thank you, Ben. It was really good. You could have had some beans and cornbread.
yeah. I thank you, Jada, for
it's good. So I want to tell your people. I also wish to tell your people at the Amherst Cinema, they also have two of my other favorites that I want them to see. And that's Moonlight. I hear it's really good. I know. Cinema, I want my free tickets now. Where is what's it called? Moonlight. But it's a timeless story of a human connection, of self-discovery. Moonlight chronicles the life of a young Black man from childhood to adulthood as he grows up in a rough neighborhood in Miami, struggles to find his place in the world. New York Critics Pick, nominated for 8 Academy Awards. And then also Lion, 5-year Saru, and this is based on a true story. I saw them on TV, the real kid. Saru gets lost on a train, which takes him thousands of miles across India, away from home and family. 25 years later, he sets out to find his lost family and finally return to his first home. Lion stars Dave Patel. I'm saying wrong. Please, my friends from the subcontinent, please, me and my accent, I'm from Texas. Rooney Mara and Nicole Kidman. And that's nominated for 6 Academy Awards. So I hear these are really good. And I am so happy this year we can say that Oscar is not so white. and these were the movies that Ruthie, my sweetheart, paid for me. That's why I bought the potato chips that I was eating. I'm so happy because I would have eaten them all by myself. And so thank you for keeping my belly within portions. And so and let's support our local cinema and independent films, and come out to Amherst, or they're also, some of these are also at the other theaters. But
So you're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio, 103.3 FM in Florence. I'm your host, Ruthie Wardring, here with Jada Tarbutt in Springfield.
Like Frasier, where they can call in? Call in. I'm listening. Do they call in?
They can call in. And I don't know if you saw the phone blinking a little bit ago.
Yeah,
I didn't answer it because I don't. That technology confuses me.
Oh, I know how to do it. Call in. Listening.
Call in,
I'm on the air. Call in. Say hi.
Or we got to give the number, 585-1033.
And if you're single and everything.
Jada, wait a minute here.
Well, political stuff and stuff like that. Yeah, of course. Yeah. You know, talk about anything, what's going on in the world. You know, political movements. What are you doing to make the world a better place? How are you interrupting oppression and stuff
serious
like that?
Now.
Yeah, call. And if you're single and you're cute, you go, you know.
You know, there was something that I wanted to talk about, the parts in this movie that made me cry.
It was 1965. He gave a speech and he said something. I have to say this because I'm an actress on stage too. But it really is true. One time I portrayed Lorraine Hansberry. My understanding is that James Baldwin and Lorraine Hansberry was tight. You see these fingers tight.
Yeah.
And I guess at the time, listen to me like I know him, Bobby Kennedy, you know, he was attorney general. John F. Kennedy was president. And they had like, I guess he went to go. Oh man, that image, this has hit me. They were looking at these images in the South where these police officers, particularly that image where this police officer at this teacher, he had his foot in her neck. Mm-hmm. And they said, you need to go. And they had gotten together these, I don't want to say literary people, you know, in a middle-class Black people like James Baldwin, saying, you need to get a commission and go down there and talk to these people. And I guess from what I could gather in the documentary, Bobby Kennedy was very interested, and he was saying something to the effect like, well, why would I need to do that? And then Lorraine Hansberry, from what I've portrayed and read of her, said, duh, don't you see what's going on? And she got a little frustrated from what I can understand in the movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, did you get that as well? And she said, don't you see what's going on there? And I remember when I portrayed her, I used to have to go around and look at smokers because I don't smoke. And she puffed. And she puffed like, you know, trying to get in. You know, Bobby Kennedy, I really think he was really trying to understand it. But again, that was the cultural and the racial and I'm sure the class and sexual divide of people trying to understand what was going on. My frustration, and this is something we'll talk about a little later, is what we're going through right now. I feel like I'm going through something here in this most progressive place of Northampton where this stuff is going over. And that's the part that gets me. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I was a Bob Marley. If you don't learn from, or some great philosopher, or even we're saying this, if you don't learn from history, particularly, you're doomed to repeat the mistakes. And yeah. that image, and they showed that image in that, in what we saw of this, these police officers manhandling this black teacher in the South with their foot on her neck. And you think, is this necessary? And then she's trying to have this, you know, one of the Kennedy brothers who's attorney general, and I'm sure he cared about this, saying, you need to do something. The time is now. And I'm thinking about the book that Martin Luther King wrote, Why We Can't Wait. And then you get, you know, initially Martin Luther King, I mean, and, you know, Malcolm X, you know, the difference between them, you know, I grew up in the South. You get Martin Luther King, who was raised Southern Baptist. And, you know, I grew up Southern Baptist. My grandfather grew up in the church. And you're saying, look, I'm down here. You know, I'm here with Bull Connor's dogs, right, biting at your feet and bumming in the schools and all of this. And then you get Malcolm X like, it's by the bullet or the ballot. What do you want? You know, that anger. Mm-hmm. And then you get, you know, Medgar Evers trying to organize the NAACP, and you get them trying to get votes. And then he shot up in his house and his driveway, and the bullet and the blood and his children seeing it. And you see his son, and oh, Lord, I saw all that. And I thought, oh, my God, I was crying. And then he was at this, Baldwin was at this meeting, which is what I was trying to allude to earlier. I'm sorry, I'm Southern, I'm tangential. And he was at this meeting, and this is when I saw you crying. I didn't even want to look at you. You could see my back was away from you because we were both emotionally involved with this. And it was at a meeting somewhere in 1964, and I believe it was Attorney General Robert Kennedy, who had said something like, maybe in 40 years, you'll have a black president.
Yeah, he was trying to say, look, we've made progress. We've made progress. We might see a black president. I could foresee a black president in our lifetime, is what he said, I believe.
And I think James Baldwin was so exasperated at that point. Like, and then the next scene.
He was like, 400 years, and you're telling me in 40 more years someone.
The possibility. And that was 1965. Mm-hmm. So then we had that. We didn't see it in 1995. Well, maybe, because I do see Bill Clinton as a black president in some ways. But then I saw you when they showed Barack Obama. And I started crying. I started crying because, Lord have mercy, my grandmother never saw that. My Aunt Beverly never saw that. My grandmother, Dite. That's where I get the nickname Jada, Julia. And my grandmother was Dite, so I put all those names together. So some people in the audience may not remember me as Jada, but my name is Joella. But when they died, and Mama died in 2004, and Dite died in 2007, and my Aunt Beverly died in 2008. So I took their name as Jada, as my Monica, my name in honor of them. I don't do tattoos. Oh, phone. Hello. Hello. Wait. Hello. This is Frazier. You're on the air.
Keep talking about that scene and I'll try and get the phone.
Yeah. Yeah. Answer. Hello. Hello. This is Frazier.
Keep talking about that scene.
Yeah.
About
so the, anyway, so that scene, and then Ruthie got all teary eyed and then I was just like, oh, be strong. And so he was talking about that. And so when she saw that, but I cried all the time. I had all these frozen tears because I wanted to hear every moment. And so I wanted to see and hear everything that was going on. And it was just so much. It was just clock full of so much and the way that they would divide it. And then, you know, he talked about when he got the news of, don't have me doing all this talking about myself because I'll talk all the time. It's a normal thing. Who's on that phone? Give me that phone. I'm going to talk to you. You know what, caller? Hello. Who is this?
All right. I'm going to try and put you on the air.
Hi. Who
no,
are
I
you?
I got to hang up.
No, don't hang up.
Yeah, because then it'll be live on the air.
Oh, hello.
Hang up. I think
play Misty for me.
You got to hang up.
I got to hang up. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Sorry, I haven't really done this.
Hello.
Are you? Hola. Wait. Can you, Johanna? Are you there?
You hung up on the person. You ought to be ashamed of yourself in this day and age, hanging up on a person. You sound like Mitch McConnell.
Now, try and call down. Back. Call back, Johanna.
What was the person talking about?
She was, I think she's like your generation, and she wanted to share some of her experience or a story or something.
You could have given the phone to me. Mitch McConnell. You ought to be ashamed of you. I'm going to send you back to Kentucky.
All right. So hopefully Johanna will call back.
Oh, Johanna, call back, honey child.
Did I mention this is Valley Free Radio? And you're listening to Out There. So
I'm not really out there. I'm sometimes, you know, I'm, you know, I don't play with no Martians and stuff. That's what she's trying to imply. You got to watch Ruthie. All right.
So the scene with the Michelle Obama and Barack Obama and the James Baldwin movie. Okay, Johannes, call him back.
Let me just talk to him and say hi. I tell the audience what they're saying.
Okay. But I think the phone's ringing in the other room.
Hello. Hi.
Can you go,
the other room? Send me out the room. Put me at the back of the bus, too. Go on with your bad self.
You said you get tired talking to yourself. Sorry. You know what? I'm going to play a song right now. And this is a request by Jada. And when she comes back, then we'll figure out what we're doing. So while that song was playing, Jada was clarifying her joke about Bill Clinton being almost like a black president.
That is a joke in the black community. Chris Rock, look what you got me in trouble here. No, Clinton is a white president, but there was a Joe Clinton who was black first.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah. No, but Barack Obama, definitely our black president in 2008. So anyway, what was her name? Hilda, thank you for calling. I answered the call.
Johanna,
and she's invited me to come back. Ruthie, if you do that, I'll come back anytime.
The Wednesday afternoon schedule is open.
Yes, I will do that. And I want to come back and tell you about some things that have happened to me that have me reeling what decade I'm in and what region of the country I'm in, dealing with issues of racism, sexism, and classism. So this time I want to talk about the movie, but I'll come back and give you details and some recording so you can do something. And who knows, Ruthie and I were telling people, don't know, I've been touring a one-woman show on the life of Ida B. Wells Barnett. So maybe I'll come back and then do a little performance so you're listening audience can see that. Yeah. It is Black History Month, and next month is National Women's History Month. So, hey, March. What are you looking like that? March.
Oh, I was just focusing on the boards.
You
things.
Can't get rid of me that much.
Oh, yeah, and what you're saying about dealing with the racism stuff is right here in Northampton.
Right here, honey.
Right here in Northampton. So
yes, you'd be surprised. We got our own little version of Mitch McConnell them. They tried to shut me up, too, and it's and the thing is, I got the thing on tape, so they can hear it for themselves.
This is at a Tenants Association meeting at your apartment building?
Yes, honey child.
Yeah.
So we'll talk about that. But in the meantime, let's celebrate James Baldwin and all the good stuff that's going on, because people, when they know about it, they'll do something about it. I'm sure of it. I love Northampton. First person that I came here who inspired me, Frances Crowe. Mm. And she is the one that I have modeled my show, Ida B. Wells, after. So there's some really good progressive people. And I want to thank the caller who called.
All right. I'm going to play I'll just play it.
The Pacifica Radio Archive celebrates Black History Month by honoring the voices of a revolution. From the Montgomery bus boycott to the Black Power movement to the fight for reparations, Pacifica was there.
We believe that integration is hypocrisy. If you were going to use the word brotherhood, that's another thing. We don't believe in integration, but we do believe in brotherhood.
But do you believe brotherhood is possible here?
Anytime, sir, you have to pass a law that will make the white man accept you into his society. That's not brotherhood, that's hypocrisy.
Bayard Rustin and Malcolm X from 1960 debating the direction of the civil rights movement on Pacifica Radio. The airwaves of Pacifica radio stations included some of the most important African-American thinkers, artists, poets, writers, speakers, and activists of the 20th century. Listen to these voices and you'll hear their dreams and demands for the political, social, and economic restructuring of America. To find out more, visit our website at pacificaradioarchives.org.
So one of the reasons I wanted to play that was because, so after we went to the movie yesterday, then I had a meeting with someone. She's a grad student from UMass who's doing a project, and she's interviewing both white people and black people, people who identify as black or white, about their experiences in the movement and how they perceive, I wish I had it, like how they perceive what they think needs to be done, what white people should do, And one of the cards I was supposed to, it was like a card sorting task, and one of the things I was supposed to value, put a value judgment on was, should white people be able to criticize what black people are doing for civil rights? And I was kind of hung up on that because I was like, I think white people should trust the leadership of black people. But if there's a true relationship, you should be able to, but we're not there because of the power dynamic. It's kind of how I felt. I don't know. What
do I think about it? We have just 2 minutes.
We're just like half a minute. What do you think of it in 30 seconds?
Well, I would just say, white people, right now, let's, like what you're doing, let's get organized within yourselves and, you know, work on yourself right now. I mean, I'd say that's a lot right now. You know, we women, we're getting organizing, we're marching, we're, let's put our concentration on getting rid of somebody right now.
Yeah. Yeah. This card sorting task had like, like 50 cards, and like it had a lot of those, like the self work was really
let's
important.
Let's do that.
One more thing before we go, I just want to give a little shout out to Dwayne Rainey's show Friday afternoons at 2. My generation, take a walk or roll through the 70s with rock and roll music. Thanks for listening to Out There today. You've been listening to Joella Tarbutton Springfield, or Jada, and I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock.
You are